Case number 225115, United States of America versus Kendrick Flintroy. Oral argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Sasse for the appellant.
You pronounced my name right. I'm amazed. I never get that. Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
I am Greg Sasse, as she said, representing Kendrick Flintroy. I would request 3 minutes for rebuttal. And I apologize in advance. I'm getting over a bronchial infection, and I may start coughing in the middle of the thing. I have a pocket full of cough drops and another pocket full of tissues, and that sounds to me like the title of a country and western song, but be it as it may. In this case, there was error. It was plain. It affected the outcome of the case, and it seriously affects the fairness, integrity, and public reputation of our judicial proceedings. This court clearly established that a prosecutor may not ask a jury to convict to protect their community. The strategy here apparently from the
cut to the chase here, could you tell us specifically what the prosecutor argued or asked a witness that is the basis of your community protection argument? Because we've read this and we've read your brief, and you never give us a specific example of the prosecutor doing what you say the cases establish the prosecutor's prohibited from doing.
This is a new wrinkle. It's the same thing by implication. It's presenting a chamber of horrors of the drug problem in Kentucky.
So you're saying he didn't make the argument explicitly.
I'm
implicitly.
Yes.
Okay.
And what he said at the end was,
what did he say that collectively, implicitly made the argument that would fit within the cases that you've cited?
In the context, yes. He cemented by saying, for our community, Flintroy is a very high-level trafficker. He said that the DEA only handles the biggest fish, implying Flintroy is one of the biggest fish and obviously one of the biggest causes of the problem in Kentucky. And there were other comments like that. That's how it was done. It was not done by actually coming right out and saying, we want you to convict to protect your community. It's presenting your community as a terrible problem for all these reasons. And this is a big fish. This is a high-level trafficker in Kentucky, and the implication is, if you want to help yourself, you know what to do.
Well, the government has to prove that the quantities are ones for distribution, doesn't it?
Sure, and that's, we have no quibbling with that. What I quibble with is things like, the agent says he only testifies as an expert concerning the war on drugs. Right out of the chute, we're talking war on drugs. We're not talking the case against Flintroy. The next thing he says, he only investigates sophisticated drug trafficking organizations having a significant community impact, implying Flintroy has a significant community impact. He talked about all kinds of things from the war on drugs, controlled buys and the specter of danger they have, executing search warrants in narcotics cases. There are no narcotics here or search warrants.
You know, assuming we can jump from these references to quantity and so forth to an explicit request that conviction occur to protect the community. We've still got the fact that, there's really a lot of methamphetamine involved here, right?
Yes.
A lot.
Yeah. But that was not the way the case was presented. The case was presented as protect your community. Most of what was asked of the expert witness.
I guess my point is, once the jury understood what the quantity in fact was, and plus it was, two tote bags of drugs is kind of a lot of drugs even before they knew the exact quantity. I guess my point is, what difference do you think it made?
All the difference in the world. And we're not asking you to leap. We're asking you to take a baby step.
All right, what's the baby step?
Well, the baby step is when you present the evidence that I'm talking about, sophisticated drug trafficking organization implying he had it, expert witness only in the war on drugs, controlled buys, executing search warrants in narcotics cases, prosecuting narcotics cases frequently, indicating there's a big narcotics problem in Kentucky, which there probably is.
His credentials had to be established, didn't they?
This goes far beyond establishing his credentials.
You seem to be arguing that what looks like pretty typical standard dialogue with a police officer to establish their credentials can't be disclosed to the jury unless those specific credentials match up with the facts of this particular case. I think that's the gist of your argument, isn't it?
Well, it's not the way I would frame it at all.
Well, I get to reframe it when I ask the question.
You do. and you should. I think if you want to ask someone about his credentials, you ask him about his credentials. You ask him how long he's been an agent, the kinds of, you know, how long he's been investigating drug cases, that kind of thing. But you don't get into gory specifics of, you know, deadly force with this case.
Do you have any cases that where we've reversed because of qualification questions that were being asked of a witness?
Well, no, but I don't think these are qualification questions. I think these are community protection questions. All throughout this, it's that DEA doesn't have the manpower to deal with the drug problem in Kentucky. That's not credentials. He prosecutes narcotics cases frequently. This is the agent. That's not credentials. He talks about methods in which drugs are brought into Kentucky, how the money's paid, drugs popularized, consumed in Kentucky. Those are not credentials. He talks about opioids and adulterated with fentanyl, having seeing an increase in that. Those aren't credentials. He talks about pricing of drugs in various states and community, the national war on drugs. That's not credentials. He talks about continuous interdiction.
Any cases that you can point us to that where these not what you're describing as non-credential questions are being asked that then cumulatively comes up with your community protection implied argument?
No.
Given the absence of a case like that, how do we deal with Cleveland, where it seems to me that was even a better case for a community protection argument, and we found that there was no error in that particular case?
Well, I don't recall that case, frankly. I'm with my bronchial infection.
The case where he says, this is a serious day for the defendant, serious day for the United States. 10 kilograms of cocaine is sitting here in bricks, but if this had gotten into the community, lives would have been at stake. I mean, that seems to be much more explicit protect the community argument than anything that was said in this particular case.
It deals with the drugs.
And we did not accept that argument.
Yeah, but that's an argument for the drugs that were in the case, that were found in the case. That's not things that have nothing to do with the case, like deadly force, risk and profits of drug traffickers from high to mid to low level. That's not the case here at all. Implying Flint Roy is one of the biggest fish in the drug trafficking scene in Kentucky, that's not credentials, and that's not in this case. There's no predication for that whatsoever. That the DEA encounters drugs transported from states closer to Mexico up through Kentucky to Detroit, Chicago, and Northeast, that's not credentials, and it's not in this case. Finishing with a flourish, for our area community, Flint Roy is a very high-level drug trafficker. No predication, unavoidable implication. If you want to protect Kentucky, you've got to convict him. All these things go beyond credentials, far beyond credentials. Deadly force, that kind of thing, that has nothing to do with credentials.
Are you aware of any case in which the process, the evidence used to establish credentials was inferred to be community protection evidence? It seems to me that the cases that talk about community protection deal with explicit pleas to protect the community by conviction. Is there a case that doesn't fall within the category of explicit pleas?
No, you're correct. You're correct.
So this would be a first.
This would be a first. I don't think it's a leap. I think it's a baby step, but I think it's one that ought to be made, because to imply community protection over and over and over and over and over again.
The government's got to get the witness qualified to give the testimony he gives. So what's the point at which the government has to stop showing that he knows what he's talking about?
This agent did not provide any substantive testimony whatsoever. When asked about...
Well, wait a minute. He was the witness to show that these were distribution quantities, right?
Yes, but it's my recollection he couldn't determine exactly what a distribution quantity was because it varied. But even if that was the only thing he presented...
You mean he equivocated on whether the...
I thought he did, as I recall.
...or distribution quantities?
But even if that was clear as a bell and that was the only thing he had to present, that does not deal with any of these other items, like deadly force, all of this stuff.
Was there any objection made during his qualifications?
No. The trial attorney sat there like a bump on a log and let all this stuff roll over. I can't explain it. I wasn't there. Thank God I didn't try the case. I didn't do it. But no, I have no explanation.
So what do we do with the lack of objection?
Well, if it's plain error, you remand for a new trial. And that's what I think we have.
He told us you don't have a case.
No, we do.
If you can't find a case that, from what I can see reading this, even comes remotely close to this, how do we find plain error?
Well, you don't always need precedent directly on point to make a decision, and I'm asking you...
That's fair enough. So do you have one close?
Not really. The one you mentioned in Cleveland...
I think your candor's refreshing.
Well, maybe it's more fresh than Reed, but whatever it is. No, it seems to me clear this was a monumentally unfair trial. The jury, by implication, was told, in your community, you have this problem, this problem, this problem, this problem. They're really severe. They're really bad. This is a significant source of the problem. Mr. Flintroy is a very high-level trafficker for this area, and the implication is you need to protect yourself. And there's only one thing you can do.
Those aren't direct quotes, are they?
No, it's the implication. I mean, implication means something.
You're out of time, counsel.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, James Chapman for the United States. I'd like to just make four very brief points in response to my friend's argument. First, Judge McKeague, in response to your question asking Mr. Flintroy to identify the statement specifically making a community protection argument, he identified a statement about significant community impact and a statement about being one of the biggest fish. Neither of those statements are the prosecutor's statements, Your Honor. Those were testimony from the witness, and he's briefed this case as a prosecutorial misconduct case, and the two statements he identified for you, neither of those were the prosecutor's statements. Second, he made several...
I suppose you'd have to argue that the prosecutor knew what the answer was going to be in terms of how the prosecutor framed the question. I think we can expect that's what your friend is going to say when he stands back up, so how would you answer that in advance?
Yes, Your Honor. I would say there's no evidence that the prosecutor knew what the response would be, and I think the witness's statement is the witness's statement. It's not the prosecutor's. Second, he made reference, I think, twice in the argument to something about deadly force. There's no testimony about deadly force in this case. Second, on his argument, the court should expand this community protection argument to include implicit appeals to community protection. Again, this case is here on plain error review. He's admitted he has no case to support that, and that's fatal to his claim on plain error review. And finally, on the last point where he claimed that Agent Moore equivocated on whether possessing 20 pounds of methamphetamine was a distribution quantity, that's simply incorrect. He gave a very clear opinion that it was a distribution amount. And at this point, I will rest the remainder of my argument on the briefs unless I can answer any questions or concerns from the court. Thank you.
Thank you. Any rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor.
It's our position this was a carefully choreographed series of questions and answers, and the prosecutor knew full well what they were going to be. It seems like he's hiding behind the fact that, yes, it was the agent who said this, but what's going to the jury is danger to the community, danger to the community, danger to your community, and you can do something about it by convicting him.
Let me suggest another possible way that one could look at this case. It seems to me that the argument that was being made by the defendant was so preposterous that no jury would ever believe that argument. That's what happened in this case, not community protection.
Mm. You mean in terms of possession?
Why he had he's running across a field, he throws these
right.
bags over, he doesn't stop.
He had an explanation.
And I'm saying that explanation seemed to be so preposterous that no jury would ever believe it. And that's what happened in this case.
Well, I don't know. I think it was a circumstantial case claiming the driver put a gun to his head and told him he had to
take the bags. How can it be a circumstantial case when he's running across a field with bags that have drugs in it? That's not circumstantial. They were in his possession.
True. He had an explanation
for that.
He
ran out of immediately upon being stopped. He gets out of the car and starts running with the bag.
Claiming the guy put a gun to his head and told him he had to do it. I mean, he had an explanation. It wasn't completely...
He probably was out of gunshot range by the time he threw him over the fence and tried to climb in over after them, wasn't he?
Sure.
So... He didn't just, he continued on his own path.
Correct. And it may have been a blind panic. He may have figured out the guy had something in the bags that were bad. He was never seen handling drugs. He's never seen putting drugs in the bags. There were no taped conversations. There was nothing other than the fact that he jumped out of the car and ran up the hill.
It's kind of hard to recharacterize this as a case in which there was little evidence.
I would say there was a circumstantial
you're a zealous advocate for your client, but...
I began in the drug task force for about 5 years. I would try a case like this. I would take it to trial. But it could be lost if presented fairly. This was not presented fairly. I would finish by quoting from the government's summary of argument. Even if the questioning was improper, even if not sufficiently flagrant to require reversal, even if misconduct was flagrant, it was not so exceptionally flagrant that it requires reversal under plain error. I would submit this is exactly why plain error exists. Flagrant misconduct should be reversed, and Mr. Flintroy should be given a new trial, a fair trial. Thank you.
Thank you, and the case is submitted.